These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Conduits of Trouble Time, which means it's Zolgad and Star Tribune sports columnist Chip Scoggins, Declan Goff, as always, executive producing the programming here at Score North. And Chip Scoggins, so I saw your column on Gopher football practice and access Saturday for Sunday's paper. How many people are participating? How many players? 90-something?
It's 95 on scholarship.
Royce's head is spinning around, and he's not even here.
Yeah. So, typically it's about 60 to 65 players out there because, you lose your seniors, they're gone, and most of your freshmen haven't got on campus, although more and more are starting to graduate early so they can go through spring ball. But by and large, that's typically just a couple. But it's unlike anything I'd ever seen, and there's just so many players taking part, and it's partly because the NCAA allowed the do-over for last year, the eligibility waiver, so guys could come back. And so Mark Coyle allowed PJ to invite all the seniors back, and I think pretty much all of them took it. And then you also had, I think it was seven or eight transfers from other schools, and so they're in here too. So you just have this gigantic and some freshmen graduated early too. So you have this just gigantic number of players out there, which is just it's weird that you just don't see it that often. And Judd, this is the most experienced Gopher team that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of depth, numbers. I mean, you have two guys that are in their seventh year of college football.
What is going on here?
I mean, you went to school 7 years, right? I mean, I know.
No, I went to school about 7 months and decided this sucks. It's not for me.
That's right.
But I could have gone 7 years because that's the flip side.
Yeah, I mean, it would take you 7 years to get a degree, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah, I assume with those guys, you have a redshirt year, then you have a medical year. If you tore, you already had a redshirt and then you tore your ACL or something early in another year, and then you get that year back from the NCAA. And then you get the do-over year. So, but I look at their – let's just look at their offensive line, Judd, and I'll include tight end in there. So the offensive line, I think, will start next year. You're going to have two guys in their sixth year of college football, two in their fifth, one in their fourth, a true senior, I guess we'd call him, Daniel Fale. And then you have a tight end that's in his seventh year. It's like it's unbelievable how old and experienced this team is. Their offensive line, the one that I think they'll start, is going to have 140 career starts going into this year combined. And so it's crazy. I mean, you have a veteran quarterback who's going to be in his third year as a starter, a veteran running back. They just have veterans all over the field. And so this is a year to take advantage of it because guess what? They're not going to be veteran next year. I mean, all these guys that are, they have come back and they're in their fifth, sixth, and seventh year, they're going to be gone. So this team's going to look dramatically different in 2022.
So with all of the experience and the guys back, how good do you expect this team to be just as far as the talent that they're going to have then?
Well, they do have good experience coming back, and that's the thing. I think their offensive line is going to be really good. Getting Fale back and Curtis Dunlap. Dunlap had an injury, and Fale opted out. So you get two guys that were starters. I don't think Dunlap will start this year. Fale definitely will at right tackle. But you have nine guys on the offensive line that have played, that have started in a Big Ten game. And so you're going to have two or three guys as backups who started last year or who have started. More than just a spot start, but actually started the number of games that are your backups. And that's a good thing. I think the biggest area where that jumps out to me is their defensive tackle rotation. And that's where PJ was really strategic because, Judd, you saw it, they got pushed around in the interior last year. They just were not good up front, particularly in the inside. And so he went out, and I think that's where he said, we're using the transfer portal or we're getting transfers in here. And they got two guys. This Niles Pinckney from Clemson and Val Martin from NC State, North Carolina State, both of them grad transfers. I think one of those guys will start. I think both will be in their top four. And so automatically just bringing those two guys in, your depth gets a lot better at defensive tackle. And I think they have five or six guys that they reasonably can count on at defensive tackle alone. And so that's just a lot different than what they've had before. They've, you know, either they had injury or what have you. If you try to rotate, you're putting a freshman out there who's just not ready.
Right.
Or a sophomore. And so I think they're going to be a lot more stout in the middle of that defensive line. And so I think the two units, and that's the most important thing, I think those two units are going to be pretty good. I think the offensive line is going to be huge and physical and experienced. And as you know, to me, experience and age is a huge thing along the offensive and defensive lines, because the difference between a 19-year-old and a 22-year-old football player as a lineman is, it's massive, because
literally,
exactly.
Massive. Yes.
Their bodies change. I mean, 4 years in the strength program, in a college football strength program, your body is going to change.
And you get fat too.
Yeah. And so I think those two units are going to be good. And this is kind of where I feel, Judd. I mean, this is the time, right? I mean, other years we heard PJ say we got the youngest team in college football. This is the year zero, and then building. This is what they've been building for right here, and you have to take advantage of it. You know, you have to take advantage of this, because previous teams, you either didn't know what you were getting from the Gophers, or you thought you had a pretty good idea. They know, like all the players they have come back, they know what they have. They know what they have in Tanner Morgan. They know what they have in this offensive line. They know what they have in the defensive line, I think. And in secondary, although they're still trying to add a couple players there. PJ said after spring ball, he didn't close the door and maybe add another transfer.
He's like Zim now.
Yeah, yeah.
Defensive line and corners.
Yeah, to me, the biggest question marks, Judd, are wide receiver. They've got to find two or three guys there, or a number two and a number three. I think Ottman Bell's a really good receiver. And then in the secondary, I still have some questions about their corners and safeties. And that's where PJ said, you know, we haven't closed the book on after spring ball, see what you have, if there's an injury or whatever, that bringing in another guy. So
crazy.
This transfer portal has changed college sports. I mean, we talked about it last week, but it's changed it.
Yep.
I mean, it is like free agency now, that you can go through spring ball and say, you know what?
Yep.
We're a little thin at cornerback. Let's see who's on the way on the portal and bring
the waiver wire. You're right.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, because you can go over, for people who don't know, there's an 85 scholarship limit in college football. But because of that eligibility waiver, the NCAA is allowing teams to go over that this year. And PJ said that Mark Cole let them do 9 or 10 over. Because I asked him, I said, could you get to 100? You know, and he's like, I don't know. But he said some teams, so if you're at 85 and then you bring back all your seniors, if you had 25 seniors, which just through attrition, nobody really ever does, but let's assume you did, and you brought them all back, what's 85 plus 25? What's that, 110?
Yep.
You could have 110 guys on scholarship. And he thinks some, you know, some schools, you know, the big ones, the rich ones, maybe Ohio State or Alabama, they may be pushing that number, because it's a financial thing. You know, if you're, you know, let's say you're going 10 over, right? 10 scholarships over. And let's say a scholarship is what, $25,000. Well, do the math. That's how much more they're spending for this year to allow those kids to play. And so some schools are probably willing to make that financial commitment to, you know, have the full roster and, you know, have more scholarship players.
So Chip, how much has changed for a year now because of the pandemic, and how much of this do you think is going to actually become permanent? Like, as far as the portal goes and as far as scholarships go, and clearly they're not going to clear years or clear kids to return for a year in the real world after this. But how much of what we're looking at in big time college sports now is going to be permanent and really change how things are done?
Well, the portal's here to stay. It's not going away. And so college sports, let's say the big two, basketball and football, because Judd, remember, well, the portal changed it, but this one-time transfer rule is the other thing that has gone into effect. That went into effect last, or the NCAA passed it last, I think it was Friday, this past Friday, where if you're an athlete, you can transfer, one-time transfer, and you're eligible right away. Remember, in the past, you could get a hardship, you could, you know, make an excuse, and they might do it, but now, you don't need a reason. If I'm transferring there, I play right away. And that, and remember, that's happened in all the other sports. That was available to athletes in all the other sports except the big ones, the football, basketball, and hockey. But now it's open to everyone. And so that is changing college sports in a dramatic way that it's not going backwards. I think the scholarship limits are going to go back to 85. And remember a while back, Judd, during which is so funny, that when they had the college football playoff and the big talk was, well, maybe they should reduce scholarships to bring more parity in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like have the scholarship limits go down to 70, and then those kids that were at Alabama or Ohio State were going to have to go somewhere else. Well, heck, now they're talking about some having 110 scholarship for this year, so it's gone the opposite. But I do think after we get through this, I think you'll go back to the 85.
Crazy.
But the portal and the one-time transfer has just made this chaotic in some ways. I mean, look what's going on in basketball. Mm-hmm. With, you know, Ben Johnson and just kind of how chaotic
it is. He's got a whole new team, Chip.
Yeah, it is.
And it's veterans.
Now, once if you're an established coach and one thing, you're not going to have nine guys leave in a year, I don't think. But I don't think it's unrealistic for even an established head coach to think you're going to lose anywhere from 2 to 4 players every year and just that be the expectation. Because I think for whatever reasons, you know, guys are homesick, mad with their playing time,
sure,
you know, whatever, just want to get a better situation. It's just a lot easier now. Especially with the one-time transfer, you know, it's just, it's a heck of a lot easier. And so, it's weird. It's not just these big schools. I was talking to a mid-major coach the other day, and it's like, if you're at a lower level and you have a player that has a couple good years and is, you know, all conference or, you know, is averaging 25 points, you probably live in fear that guy is going to go to decide, hey, I want to play in a Big Ten or I want to play in a Power Five conference, and it's just easy for him to leave your program and do it if he thinks it's going to help him get to the pros or more, you know, publicity or whatever. It's a crazy, crazy time right now.
So are you, especially for basketball, are you going to have coaches who pivot and say, you know what, instead of going out and trying to find high school kids, okay, I'll still recruit a couple kids here and there, but I am going to try to make my roster up for the most part of guys that I can get who, to your point, Chip, and you're exactly right, are unsatisfied. You know, I've been playing two or three years with this coach and I don't like him as much. Are there going to be coaches that you think completely change philosophy and they'll still recruit high school kids, but they will also put a much greater premium on trying to bring in immediate veteran talent that can probably help you win as opposed to trying to cultivate a kid who might leave you after a year or two?
100%. I mean, it's funny. I asked Ben Johnson this at his introductory press conference, and I said, kind of, what's your philosophy with this portal? Because ideally, in a perfect world, you recruit a kid, and he comes in your program, and he develops over time, but how do you balance trying, you know, to want that to happen with the reality of there's just so much fluidity in college basketball right now with kids going or mobility coming and going, and you know you're going to lose some. And he said, well, it really forces you to reevaluate roster management. And he said, I don't think you'll ever use up all your scholarships because you always want to have some open, right?
Sure.
Because, hey, there might be a guy in the portal that we can use. And so my guess is, coaches will probably look at it 50-50, right? 50% high school recruiting, 50% portal.
Wow.
Because the thing is, Judd, you don't like it, but you know it's going to happen. You're going to lose veterans off your team. And so if you're constantly putting everything into high school kids and kids, you're not going to have that veteran presence on your team that you want. And so if I was doing it, I would do it 50-50. I would say, like, if I had 4 scholarships, I would say I'm going to recruit 2 high school kids and get 2 off the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's changed college basketball because we're never going to get to know these teams, the players, I don't think, right? Because the days of, you know, I was thinking about this, like, you know, think about like those Georgetown teams and Duke teams and UNLV teams that we were up. The reason why people loved them, hate them, paid attention is because you knew them year after year after year. They were together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's gone. And so I mean, think about this Gopher team next year. I mean, it's going to be 9 new players out there. And the next year, it might be 4 new players. And the year after that, I mean, it might be 5 new players, and not just freshmen, just guys coming in. So it's almost like these teams are thrown together, you know? And so I think it's changed college basketball. And you wonder what it will do. Because I do think familiarity leads to ratings, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, because people hated Leitner at Duke because, you know, they had watched him for 3-4 years. Like, it built up. It built up. He didn't come in. And I feel like kids being one and done in college basketball has already been an issue for that. But like what you're saying now is just complete chaos with I play at North Carolina for a year and then I go play at, you know, Kentucky for a year or something like that, which I don't think it helps the sport, but it definitely changes the dynamic, I'm sure, of coaches, especially those who say, come play for me, I'll play you a ton. And the other thing, Chip, that I don't get is, how are we supposed to believe now that there is not going to be rampant cheating in place? Because, you know, if I'm a senior, I got my hand out. I'm sorry. I just got my hand out. Like, if I'm a high school kid, I got to be really good to say, okay, pay me and we'll try and cheat. But if I'm 21 or 22 and I'm about to leave Duke to come to your program, that's a cash grab. Like, I want a car. I want your money. I want a lot of things.
Well, I don't know that there'll be any more or any less, because I think it just goes on. I mean, I think it's kind of well understood by this point that
it encourages it. How about that?
It does encourage it. But it also encourages, it may encourage cheating, but I'm all for players have more powers and more, you know, because coaches can leave, why can't they leave? I believe in all that, but I think there are the consequences of, hey, you may have put a lot of time and energy into a player, and you may have a great relationship with him, but he's going to go look elsewhere, you know? I think about, like, this Parker Fox kid that was at Division II.
Yep.
You know, and to his credit, he got a ton of Division I offers, but I'm sure for the, you know, Saul Phillips, his coach in Northern State, it's a kick in the gut, because you're like, man, I got this great player and you're a successful program. Now all of a sudden you don't have him. And that's happening all over, you know, even at the Power Five schools, they're losing guys that are veterans that you're counting on. And so I can't imagine being a coach and trying to put together a team it's going to be interesting to see how chemistry and all those things, where it's just constantly in flux with guys going and coming. And obviously a coaching change is going to exasperate that. When you have a coaching change, you're going to have a lot of turnover, which what Ben's going through right now. And it won't be this much next year or the year after, but it is going to be something that they constantly have to deal with. And I think was it Vitale, Dick Vitale, that tweeted today that he's already heard some, was it rumors that coaches are encouraging kids to get in the portal, and we have a scholarship open for you if you do. It's like, well, duh. Like, of course that's what's going to happen, you know?
That's the whole point, yes.
I mean, that happened before, too, right? Hey, I hear so-and-so's unhappy. If, you know, you can come here, we have a spot for him. Now you just, with the portal, you just put your name in there and it's a done deal. So, but it's interesting. Yeah. But for coaches, you got to recruit high school kids, but you have to, I imagine if you're a coach, you have to be on that portal all the time. Like Twitter, you have to be on Twitter all the time.
That's coach what I'm saying is, like, where's your attention then? High school kids or the portal? Cause I'm probably going portal.
It has to be both, you know, particularly if you have a pressing need, like if you're a football coach, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, we lost 2 wide receivers, you know, this year, a senior and a couple to the draft. Do I really want to have 3 freshman wide receivers? Nope.
So
a veteran injury who's played.
Chip, here's Vitale's tweet. Okay. The NCAA, in fact, so he tweeted this today, and we are recording this episode on Wednesday. The NCAA enforcement staff better get on the transfer portal scene, as coaches have told me the cheating going on is rampant. Must, in all caps, must nail those tampering. But even if they do, it will take years before sanctions are levied. Dick, it's gone. The ship has sailed.
Out of the bag. I mean, I'm sorry.
But yeah, you're not going to look. And we see more and more. The NCAA at this point doesn't really care. Like, I mean, we're now seeing the FBI was arresting people, basically, you know, ran an investigation. And we're all like, oh, my God, college basketball. We thought it was going to be the point shaving deal of the 1950s. And the next thing we know, they're like, ah, whatever.
Did that FBI investigation bring down anyone yet? The coaches. Now, maybe
it brought down a couple of the bag men. That's it.
Yeah, the assistant coaches, but not the head coaches.
No, heck no.
No, because they don't want to go there. But yeah, can you imagine being like NCAA enforcement staff trying to enforce that? I mean, it's just be like drinking water out of a fire hose.
Well,
I mean, there's no.
And is Vitale, you know, Vitale's like, we got to keep the sanctity. There's no sanctity in college sports.
Basketball.
Yeah, and this, you know, I mean, as a fan, this portal thing's hilariously funny because, to use your word, it is chaos. But once you did that, you just go home, you know?
Yeah, it's, well, once you've done that, and I sort of rolled my eyes because a lot of coaches are like, well, this is good. We're going to have free agency. I sort of rolled my eyes, but you know what? It is.
It is, yes.
That's exactly what it is.
Yep.
I mean, it is college's version of free agency.
But it's worse because contracts have no terms.
No. And the portal combined with the transfer rule, the one-time transfer rule, where, because that used to be a deterrent.
Yes.
Not a roadblock, but a deterrent.
It made you think, yeah.
Yeah, because you're like, man, do I really want to sit a year? And, you know, that's, I like to play and I don't have to sit a year. Now, if you take that away, it's like, well, okay, I'll transfer if I can play right away.
Yep.
And so it has become basically free agency.
Absolutely. Scale of 1 to 10, what is your concern about the Twins' early season struggles, which continued last night in Oakland with them being shut out not once but twice, and they have now lost, or I think now they've lost three in a row, and more importantly, in their last 10, Chipper, they are 2-8, and they look awful at the plate.
Yeah, I would say a 7 or 8 right now, Judd. I think I said last week with you, I still think they're a good team, you know, and how much of these, you know, the struggles last night, although they haven't been really hitting with runners in scoring position before this, but just having the layoff of a couple of days and not even getting BP. And I don't want to use that as a blank excuse because they haven't been good before this, but I would say a 7 or 8 right now. Something just doesn't seem right. And take away the COVID and all that, obviously that's not good, but
right.
Even when they were here, it just felt, I don't know, like there's not an urgency or something's missing from this team. And I it's hard to put my finger on it or articulate it, but it just doesn't feel right yet. You know, I still like the roster. I mean, I still think they have some guys that can produce, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I think it's, I don't think it's a 10 alarm yet, but it's growing. Where are you at?
I'm probably at about a 6 right now, but here's my problem. So my problem, what gets to me about this is not the immediate struggles. It's how the people who lead this team, i.e. Falvey, Levine, and Rocco, it's how they're handling it. And you used the word that I used as well, and I think it's the perfect word here, the urgency. Like there are, you know what, baseball is a long year, and I totally get that. And there are a lot of times where you can sit back and be like, hey, dudes, let's all calm down. You know, it's a long season. Let's not get uptight. It's fine. Right now, I would like to see, I don't want to see meltdowns. I don't want to see yelling, but yeah. I would like to see an urgency where the Twins don't say things like, Well, we don't want to put Kirilloff on a commercial flight to Oakland because, you know, it's a pandemic. And it's like, no, you're stacking losses right now. This is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Show me some show me what you haven't shown me in the playoffs, which is that you understand that there are times where you're going to have to push the gas down just a little bit. And these guys are so reluctant to push the gas down. You know, it's always like, it's going to be fine. Let's play some more Fish. We'll play the Grateful Dead next, and we'll all just you know, that's what that. So what gets to me is the fact that I still don't see them acknowledging that at times there is an urgency to what you're doing. And right now would be a really good time to say, we need to take a few steps here to make sure that this streak ends, and let's give ourselves a better chance to win. And when you are starting Williams Astudillo at second base, back-to-back games, you are not telling me that you're taking this as seriously as I am.
Yeah, I mean, there are times where you say, you know what, I was going to give that player a day off, but we really need a win today. I was going to, you know, there are times where I might take that picture, that starting pitcher out, you know, and watch the rest and all his pitch cut. But you know what, I'm going to maybe push it a little bit today. And that's where the urgency is. Like, decisions like that more than, like you said, coming in and flipping over the buffet table after the game. On the field, isn't this a time where, isn't this why you got Josh Donaldson to come in and bring that kind of spitfire?
That's what I thought.
Leadership. This is maybe the time for him to be vocal, right?
Or yes. No,
too soon to do that.
I think he could. Well, but it's just. But I mean, it's roster moves too. Like you're, you've got guys sick.
Yeah.
I totally get that. That sucks. But you need to give. I'm not trying to say that Kirilloff is going to fly to Oakland and hit 8 home runs or something. But what I am saying is, plug him in right now, and he gives you a better chance. Like you're not. You are sort of basically to me, allowing losses to occur without management showing what I would consider to be the necessary concern right now.
How much do you think of it is too, just kind of their natural personality, and how much of it do you think, you know what, in this division, you're probably not going to get run away from
early. But that's a weird thought process to me.
Well, I agree. I mean, I don't know I'd necessarily care what people are doing around me. I'm trying to win, you know, right now and show them one of the best teams in baseball or can be one of the best teams in baseball. But it is just kind of this take it as it comes approach where it's like we're not going to deviate from the plan because no matter what's happening around us, because this is how we do things. Yeah, and maybe that's part of why I'm feeling it, but it's just like this whole season so far has just felt weirdly off.
Mm-hmm.
And
agreed.
Just kind of a boring team that's not hitting, and guys that, you know, that's the other thing is guys that had that step back last year that you thought, okay, maybe they'll come back and be a little bit more what we thought from 2019.
Yep.
Kepler. No.
Nope. Polanco.
Blanco, no, not really. Garver, you know. So I mean, but
Sano.
It's like, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys struggling, but I don't know. It just doesn't. Something about it just hasn't felt right to me. And then now you add on to this, you know, the COVID outbreak that they have, which, you know, they got to get that under control because I mean the roster is decimated right now. You know, with they're down to their third shortstop at this point. That's the Riddle went on.
And he just went on the, COVID list today. Oh. Yeah, no, you're right. You're exactly right. But this is this is a time where I would like to see, and I'm not asking him to change in a huge way because that's probably not in him, but this is a time I'd like to see Rocco with a little bit more of a sense of urgency to things. And we still get that. Well, we're never going to get too high or too low. And it's like, okay, but you're losing game. Like, you know, you have not scored a run going back to Friday, and then, of course, they were off until Tuesday. You've not scored a run since the sixth inning on Friday in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not just an ordinary, oh, we lost a couple of few close games. You know, you are really scuffling and struggling, and I just feel like there's this, you know, don't worry, be happy. It's like, no, you can't be happy right now.
Yeah, we need a little more.
No Bob Marley right now. Bob Marley's not working for me, Chip.
It's funny how that style, when things are going well, you know, we praised Rocco, in 2019?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, God, he's the perfect manager for that clubhouse and just the approach and the rest and recovery. And now it's like, Rocco, let's go. you gotta adjust here. You know, there's got to be a alternate switch at some point. But I don't think – I think he is – who he is and his personality. I can't see him changing abruptly. Do you?
No, I don't. But here's my problem. I have been so offended by the handling of things in their five consecutive playoff defeats now with Rocco that like, this is a situation where I would like to see some urgency, which is going to then, if they can make the playoffs, which they might not now, but if they can make the playoffs, this is a time I would like to see, you know what? I've been doing this for 3 years now, right? I sort of know I got to flip a switch a little bit more. I don't have to be untrue to myself, but there are going to be times where you might have to do something different. And I feel like the mentality is like, no, that's not how I do things. It's like, okay, do you want to repeat all of the same mistakes over and over and over again? Because, you know, Chip, it's very fair that the expectations now have been raised, and they should be raised.
100%.
This is no longer, oh my God, this is so much fun. They might make the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs, and now they lost, but they made the playoffs. You know, this is 3 years in. This is an, okay, turn that next corner, and I don't see it being turned.
Well, no, I mean, expectations absolutely have to change. I mean, it's because – I mean, when you look at the roster on paper, this is not a rebuild. This is not a young team that, you know, you're have that vision of, okay, let's, you know, 3 years from now, let's see where they're at. This is not – this is a veteran group, right? I mean, this is a veteran roster. You know, they're just not young guys. Arise is young, but other than that, who would you call a young player on this team? And so – no, the expectations were, in, you know, you looked at the preseason thing, and there were people talking about this team as at whatever the odds were, the makers going into it. So this is disappointing. I mean, there's no other way to say it. This start has just been absolutely disappointing, and you want to just see something spark it to get it, you know, get it in gear.
You want to see them score some damn runs.
It just feels like they're just kind of plodding along, just, okay, well, we got, you know, another loss, or we're not hitting. I mean, and I don't even know what I want him to do. Now, sometimes I want to leave the pitchers in there more, or, you know, maybe not rest the guy or run out and pull out a guy if he, you know, acts like he has – I thought Rossi had a great column, you know. If someone has a cough, you know, they run out there to make sure he's not killing over. But, yeah, I mean, but it's just – I keep going back to it. Just doesn't feel right, Judd. And I don't know. It's just missing something. You know, it's missing the spark. It's missing some energy and some urgency about it. And I don't know how they get that other than the guys that you're paying, you know, big contracts to need to start performing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Wolves question, because I've been thinking about this more and more of late. And I guess I started to think about this, Chip, because I made the comparison to what the Wild has done, okay? Because the Wild in very short form have turned themselves from being a disappointing team that the past, you know, 2 years or three years was not that good to a competitive team. And you can see it building. Like I'm very high on where they're going as a team. On the Wolves, is there any reason with their talent, if they're well coached, and I'm not saying they're a finished product, but is there any reason why a year from now that we should not be having a conversation about them being a playoff contender? So I'm not saying making a playoff run. I'm not saying they're a great team, but I look at Ant, I look at Cat, D'Lo, if they make, you know, if they get a veteran here or there, is there any reason why they can't take a page from what the Wild has done and become a competitive night in, night out team that at least you think has a chance to make the playoffs?
I will say yes for this reason.
Okay.
Are they ever going to play defense?
And that's Chris Finch's job to get that from him, right?
Yeah, but he's an offensive guy, Judd.
Yeah.
I mean, if they don't make a concerted effort to be, I mean, honestly, we talked about this, you know, nine straight years. I mean, if they don't commit themselves to being better defensively, they'll have fun games where they win 140 like last night.
Last night was great fun, yes.
But you're not going to beat good teams if you don't play defense. I mean, you're just not. And so I don't know. I don't think we can. They can be a fun team and have a lot of personality and all that, but if they don't commit themselves to being better defensively, then they're not going to go anywhere. And I just, I mean, do you think Cat's going to become, you know, a lot better? He started off good, but do you think he's going to be a lot better? Edwards, you know, has been atrocious defensively at times. Russell's non-existent defensively. I mean, when your best players are not very good defensively, how are you going to be taken seriously? So, that's my only pause.
It's
on
a good
that.
Point. So here's my comeback to that, because yes, I agree completely. But again, I'll go back to what Guerin has done with the Wild, okay? And here's the difference. He went out and very adroitly got two guys in particular, Bonino from the Predators and Ian Cole from the Avs. And neither one of those guys is an all-star or anything close.
Not a household name, even.
No, right? Not at all. But they each won cups in Pittsburgh, two cups in Pittsburgh. And both of them know how to play. And they know how to play a responsible game, a smart game, and they are wired in a way that rubs off, I think, on a lot of players, especially the young ones on that roster. And that's my point about, I think the Wolves desperately need to bring in not Rubio, okay? Not him. It hasn't worked. I don't know. He still looks fried half the time to me. But if you brought in a guy, and I'll use as an example, a Taj Gibson type with more left in the gas tank than Taj had, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a guy that gets it, a guy that can lead, a guy that doesn't have to yell and scream, but you watch him and he has a presence where he says, "We're playing defense, gentlemen. Like, I don't care what you think. We are going to do this." This is where I think that there's a page that can be taken from the hockey team that can be translated to the Wolves, because I, you know what? I love Ant, but Ant is not going to lead in that way. And he's not even close to being that guy. Carl Anthony Towns.
Yeah. He's 19.
And Kat's not that guy. He's not going to be. And D'Lo's not that guy. But I think if you did this right and you brought in the right veteran presence who basically did the little things that suck to do, but they help you win games, that's where you can turn that corner.
Yeah, I think that is a must, and I agree with that. But can you get there? You said Kat's not that guy. Can you get there without him being not that guy? That's the thing I wonder about. Hmm. You know, I mean, I don't say he has to be your best defensive player, but he needs to be one of the top two or three, right? Or at least have the level of commitment that it's going to take to get there. Because, I mean, he's just, you know, he's such a unique and gifted player. But I, you know, if you surround him with better defensive guys, you know, and maybe McDaniels brings that with him, you know, but I don't know that he's going to be of that presence, right? Do you? I mean, I know he's a young kid too.
Yeah, he's a young kid. No, this is going to have to be a veteran.
You need that 28 to 30 year old.
Yes.
Guy with that's, you know, that has, like you said, enough left in the tank that he's a credible player that can play, you know, be on the court a lot, not just.
Yep.
I don't know, Judd. I mean, I've just seen this team flounder so much defensively, and, you know, I assume. Here's the thing: when we get to the end of this year, do you think that Gerson is going to see enough from the Russell Towns experiment that he's going to want to go forward with it. If they get that top three pick and not start over at point guard.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know at this point.
If you're in a position to get Cunningham or Jalen Suggs, you have to take one of those two, right?
I would think so.
That's your point guard. It has to be.
Yeah.
And so,
but is he going to jettison D'Lo already after they just started to play together? I don't know. And I think there's a case to be made that they possibly should do that. But, you know, it's ego, it's pride. I acquired this guy. I gave up a lot potentially to get this guy.
Exactly.
Is Gerson going to say what you just said, but then say, I'll put my ego completely in check here and give up on this because of what's behind door two is potentially more attractive? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you would be admitting you made a mistake, and some people would look at it that way, but I would look at it as you admitting that, hey, there's a better option. It's not necessarily a mistake. It's just, yeah, you gave up a lot, but you just feel like there's a better option for your future if you do that. But I don't know that he'll be in that position. And so if he doesn't, you come back with, you know, Russell Towns and Edwards as your three best players, and two of them are probably two of your weakest defensive players, yeah. You know?
But that's what I'm saying, you've got to get help here. You've got to get help here. And I think if you do it, so here's the discussion I think that the Wolves should have with Kat after the season, and I don't know how it goes, and it has to be framed right, okay? But I think the discussion with Kat has to be, you are, without a doubt, the best player on this team. To your point, Chip, you know, your skill set is phenomenal. You could shoot threes, you could play inside, like what you can do is special. And you are a special player. And you are going to be the best player on this team. And if we have success here, it's going to be largely because of you, Carl. But that being said, this doesn't have to be your team. And I don't know how you say that, and I don't know how you do that, but I just don't think that he has the gene to be the guy who is like the spokesman and who is the best player who also plays defense, because to your point, he really doesn't, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how you get there without offending him, because you don't want to do that. But if you can dial down where he doesn't feel that he has to be the spokesman, he has to be the face of the team, that he can just be this phenomenal talent, I think you'll actually get more from him and the entire team.
Yeah, it's funny because
it's a weird path.
Everything though that they've done, though, to this point has been counter to that, right?
Yes, it has. You're right.
First thing Finch did when he came in, he's like, everything we do is run through Cat. He's the best player, you know, and Gerson is like, you know, everything revolves around Cap. This is his team. He's our best player. And so I don't think they could be in a position to come back and say, I know he said all that, but you're better as a 1A than a 1, you know, or that you need a co-pilot, so to speak, to be the true leader. I think they just try to draw out something. And I don't know that it's there, you know, but I mean, you think about what Dame Lillard means to Portland, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what you need from Towns to be at that level.
I just don't think you're going to get that. I just don't think he's capable of being that person.
Yeah, I mean, it's personality, it's everything, but I don't know. And, you know, so much of this plan, though, Judd, is banking on Russell being the co-pilot. And
it's really going to be Ant. That's the problem, right?
It is, but in Gerson's mind, he thinks it's Russell right now, right? Because he's
yes.
said it, you know.
Yes.
But do you think he's ever going to get to the level and be the player that they envision from him? To me, I think he's just going to be a high volume shooter that can, you know, he's a good shooter and is going to score a lot.
Here's my thing.
Other than that,
here's my personal problem with the construction of this team right now, and this is going to sound really weird, because. To me, on D'Lo, I don't know yet, but my personal opinion is the biggest disappointment as far as what the expectation was, and that this is not entirely by any means on the court, is Ricky. because they brought Ricky in thinking he's going to lead. He sort of knows the way. He's a veteran presence. Cat likes him. At that time, Ryan loves him. And Ricky doesn't. Ricky's not the guy. He's not that guy. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. If you bring in an Ian Cole or a Bonino type for this team who can go about kicking ass in a constructive way, I think it's going to help people. And I think that's where Tibbs had sort of the right idea, but the problem was he had that, you know, his club of guys. And Jimmy Butler is not that guy. Jimmy Butler is a selfish. I mean, he's a great player, but he's selfish. He leads the way he's going to lead, and he has no ability for nuance, right?
Yeah. So you're thinking more like kind of like that. And he was, you know, I don't know how much he had left when he was here. Although he just scored a lot that one game. Derrick Rose.
And my ideal guy, because he plays hard as hell. He's basically been fried for 5 years now, was Taj.
I love Taj.
Taj is exactly a good Taj Gibson, not a great, but just good, is exactly what this team needs. And I think that they thought that Ricky was going to be that guy, Chip, and he's just not even close to it.
Well, no. Yeah, they thought he was going to be that version of the guard version of Taj, you know?
Yes.
Everybody gravitated, kept the locker room together and all that, but you got to have the performance on the court to match it, you know, or otherwise it's not going to resonate. Although I think Anthony Edwards has probably benefited from being with Ricky and on the practice floor and all that. I think there's,
but you know,
they talked about enough about their relationship, you know, I think there's something there, but you also got to produce on the court too. I mean, that's the whole idea. Well, you're going to help them be better defensively.
And I think you have to have rings. I think you have to know. I think teammates have to know that you won.
Yes.
Like you can't be like, well, I spent some time with the Phoenix Suns and that was fun. And, you know, Utah was a lot of fun too. And now I am back. I think, you know, athletes look at their peers with rings and there's a credibility there. There is a credibility.
Sure. And they know who's, you know, who still got it and who still has it and who doesn't. So, no, I think you're 100% right in terms of, because that part is missing. I mean, it's a glaring, you know, absence in this roster that that Gerson's going to have to add. And I don't know kind of what kind of room they have, salary cap and contracts and all that, and how difficult that'll be to, you know, get somebody if it's a free agent, you know, that want to come here, you know, because, you know, this is not going to be on the top of anyone's dream list. Now, could you do a trade? Yeah, that might work, but yeah, it's something they're going to have to address to make this roster more, is mature the right word? Maybe mature?
Yeah. Well, and I think they're also going to have to do it before the structure. Like, I think they need to get to a point where people are slotted into the right places, both on and off the court.
Sure.
But you're right. Like, everything that they do with Carl, screams that they disagree with me. I'm just telling you, if you watch Carl enough and you see his Zooms and all that good stuff, that there comes a time where you say, I pretty much know exactly who this guy is. And by the way, that's not a bad thing. He's a great player. But I know who he is. And what you're asking, it's getting to a point where all of those things, especially the off the court stuff, is not going to materialize no matter how much you wish it would.
Well, and here's the other thing, Judd. If this doesn't turn around pretty quickly, he ain't going to want to be the face of the franchise much longer, I wouldn't think. I mean, he's not going to be here 10 years and finish last all the time. I mean, well, there's got to be some turnaround coming, or everybody gets sick of losing eventually. And so, you know, we've heard his frustration, nothing to the level of like, oh, I want out of here. But we've heard his frustration after bad losses before. He's like, you know, it's been evident. And so I feel like next year they need to start turning a corner, you know, quickly, and to give him some reassurance and hope that, okay, I'm not going to be stuck in one of the worst franchises in the NBA for my entire career, you know? So I think next year is pivotal for this roster to start coming together.
I agree completely. Thanks, Chipper. I'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right, brother.
All right, take care of yourself. Bye-bye.